The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's fucking amazing.
Am I okay?
Yeah, you're fine, Matt.
Let's just start with that. We're recording, right?
Yeah.
You're fine,
you're
Matt.
You're fine, Matt.
Hi, everybody.
Good. You're fine. No
Hi,
one
everybody.
Cares.
You're fine, Matt.
Hello, yeah. Everyone.
Hello. It's another episode of Martinis and Murder.
Yes, it is. Another day of you looking tan and beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Summer's here. I'm ready to be tan, you
yes,
know?
Yes, summer is here. One of the execs at Bravo and Oxygen actually ran into her in the bathroom, and I was like, you look so tan. Her name starts with an H. So I was like, you look so tan. Have you been away for vacation? She's like, I actually just joined like the USTA, like junior, like very rec kind of league. And she's like, I'm obsessed with tennis. I was like,
yep.
Do you know John Thrasher? And she was like, John's obsessed with tennis. I want to play him. And I go, no, you have to kill him on the court because I'll never let him live it down.
Aww.
Because he's been playing for like 30 years.
Yeah, listen.
And she was like, yeah, I'm kind of a, you know, beginner, but I've always really liked it. And yeah. I was like, no, you got to like fucking kill him
if
on the court.
If it's the same person I'm thinking of,
yes.
I wanted to do a whole like Oxygen Bravo, yes, Oxygen and Bravo tennis outing.
She's doing an outing, I think, with her group, and
oh,
I was
amazing.
Like, "You got to invite us!"
Oh my god, that would be so fun.
Anyway,
inter office fun here at the Oxygen Bravo.
You know
offices.
What I'm not right now?
What?
I'm not drunk.
No, you're not.
Matt,
that's true.
What are we drinking today?
We are drinking pre-made cocktails.
Oh, wait, lazy Matt.
Because they were sent to us.
Oh, never mind.
On a complimentary basis.
Okay,
and it's
nice.
It's from Austin Cocktails.
Ooh.
Right. You can choose between Ruby Red Cocktail, which is grapefruit, lime, mint, and agave, or Cucumber Vodka Mojito, which you know what that is. Cucumber, mint, lime, agave.
Yep, definitely do.
And vodka.
I'll have the mojito one.
I'll do the grapefruit one.
Oh, okay.
I like a greyhound. I figured we could both
okay.
try.
Yeah.
You know, I'll switch halfway through because you know Mama's going to have more than one drink.
Well, that's true.
What's the company again?
It is Austin Cocktails.
Are they from Austin, Texas? Does it
I
say?
I don't fucking know.
Do you need me to read, Grandpa?
I can't read it. I didn't have my glasses.
Give me the small fine print, sweetie.
It's fine.
I really can't read it.
I just want to give them a proper shout out, but... Anyway, my God, Matt. I know I can't read.
Yeah.
Austin Cocktails and is in Bardstown, Kentucky.
Oh, one of those.
Well, thank you so much for the complimentary
yes.
bottles. I'm very excited to try it. Megan, which one are you going to go for? She's going to do the grand grapefruit
right.
one.
I'll just hang out with my mojito by myself.
Women
then.
Are just doing it for themselves. We got to stick by each other.
By the way, I love that you
I'll do the mojito.
Oh.
Yeah, there we go.
Boys two on one two. Side and girls on the other.
You know, it's funny you were mentioning about having more than one drink. You've been like killing the drinks the last couple of episodes.
Thanks for calling me out, John.
Yeah, I'm just letting you know. Like,
so
maybe
I get
take
thirsty.
It easy.
I get
maybe,
thirsty.
Maybe take it easy. all right. Well, let's get into this week's case.
Yeah.
I think I said Vix.
I wrote out my notes in like 100-point font.
Yes, I noticed that.
It's literally notes for blind people. Like, it might as well be Braille because
I read
it's
so much
bad.
Better when it's like a larger font.
Me
so.
Too. That's why I have my phone
Lots
font
of research.
Is very big and people make fun of me, but as I've said,
That's
I don't
right.
want to strain my eyes.
I'm gonna kill the drinks this episode.
Oh, is that right?
And John knows why.
Oh yeah, Matt's been through it a lot last couple days.
Oh, we gotta feel bad for Matt.
Maybe one day we'll get to it, but just know that he's going through it at the moment.
He's having a moment.
Yes, Matt, you can have a couple more drinks than usual. We'll allow it.
Yeah, it's okay.
Well, let's get to this week's episode. This is about Paul Gruber.
Yeah.
He's a retired school teacher that moved from Lake Tahoe to Sand Point, Idaho in 1993. It was his dream retirement home, spacious with a beautiful view. Hopefully one day I'll get out of my New York City apartment and have a spacious, beautiful view.
Yeah, you're ready for retirement.
Matt, go ahead. You almost spilled everything. It's fine.
Can we cheers? Oh, no. He needs ice, I think. Oh. Right? Is ice what you need? Okay. Yeah, okay. Ice is what he needs.
He's doing like weird charades and miming. It's fine. Anyway, his friend told Buried in the Backyard, which is a show on Oxygen, by the way, maybe one of my favorite shows on
Oxygen.
Definitely one of mine. Quote, it's pretty majestic. We have one of the largest freshwater lakes in Idaho, Lake Pend Oriel. We also have the Selkirk Mountains on one side of us and the Cabinet Mountains on the other. It's breathtaking. Probably one of the few unspoiled places left in the lower 48, end quote. So, you know, big,
Sounds nice,
open, amazing kind of view here is happening.
I've never been to Lake Tahoe, but a lot of my friends have, and they have just raved.
Yeah, same here.
I grew up not far from Lake Tahoe, been so many times. That's where the bear entered our cabin.
That's right.
That's where he had to fight for his life.
His life.
You gonna put a little ice in there? I don't want it to spill.
Yeah, don't spill too much
shaking,
of it.
He's shaking the ice in there.
It's little by little happening. Maybe not how a true bartender would make the drink, but it's fine.
That's fine.
You know. Thanks, Matt.
I know. It's like, remember a few weeks ago when I was drinking and I was like, why is this leaking? And like my glass was cracked all over the equipment.
We were like, what's going on here?
It's like my fault. Before you continue, let's cheers, bitch.
Cheers, bitches. Thank you.
Cheers.
How is it? You took the first sip.
Ooh, the grapefruit's really, really nice. It's really crisp, right? You can sense the grapefruit. Like you can really...
The cucumber in the mojito is very prominent.
Oh, good.
It is. It's good.
Yeah, but it's good.
Thank you,
it's
awesome
mixed
cocktails.
Well. Yeah, thank you. It's mixed really, really well. And Matt didn't have to do anything except ice.
Thank God.
That's why this is one of our better drinks.
This is why this is the best drink we've ever had.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, back to the story here. So after 4 months of setting up his home, he headed back to Lake Tahoe to spend Christmas with his daughter, Shelley, and his grandkids. Shelley told Buried in the Backyard, which, by the way, if you didn't know, this title of the show might give away some things here.
Yeah.
Quote, he was fun. There was a lot of sentimental stuff going on during that visit. He was really into my kids. He was so engaged, end quote.
Love it.
Shelley also explained that her parents divorced when she was 3 years old and said, quote, my dad was like the traditional fun dad, you know. We'd go miniature golfing and bowling and got whatever cereal we wanted and go to the beach and he was just fun. He was my daddy and I loved him, end quote.
I do like that, like, cereal is a mark of like the good parent and bad parent.
Listen, it is.
But I have a quintessential parent story. When my mom was, she'll correct me, I'm sure, but like she was out for some reason and my dad had to take care of my brother.
Yeah.
I think this was before I was born. I was like an infant and my mom comes home and my brother's just like eating sprinkles. And she's like, why is Evan eating sprinkles? And my dad was like, he wanted them for dinner. Like he didn't even register that like you shouldn't do it. He was just like,
he wanted them.
I don't
them.
Know. Yeah, it's like the sugary cereal. Like, I don't know. I just wanted them. Love you, Dad.
Love you,
this
Dad.
This is one of my favorite quotes. So he was my daddy and I loved him.
Yeah.
Which is so,
it is
so
cute.
Sweet. So sweet. So tender.
Let's see how tragic this gets after that quote, by the way. So despite her requests for him to stay longer, Paul said he had things to do and headed back to Idaho. After a few weeks, Shelley thought it was a bit odd that her dad hadn't even called. She started to wonder if something was up, especially around Valentine's Day when he usually sent her flowers. Shelley remembered, quote, I was torn between worrying and being mad, like, what are you doing? And I started making phone calls to him around that time, but no answering machine message, which was unusual for him. He usually had a message on there.
Can we also talk about his center flowers for Valentine's
Day? I know. It's like, so far, what's the issue here?
Jeez.
Then the next week, Shelley's son's birthday came and passed with no card or call from Grandpa. She left another message and began to become very alarmed. Finally, a week after that, she got a card in the mail. But as Shelley looked at it, she got an overwhelming, unsettling feeling. The handwriting didn't look right. That would really freak me out. I hadn't even thought of something like that being a thing. But like, if you got a card from somebody and it wasn't their handwriting,
I can tell Carson's hand. I can definitely tell my parents.
Same. Yeah, I know.
And my brother, but I can tell Carson's really, really well. And if she wrote me a note and somebody else, I would freak out.
Yeah, totally. Shelley said, quote, "I knew my dad's signature like the back of my hand, and he had a certain way of looping his P's, and he did dad the same way with a big, huge loop. The signature didn't have that. I was looking at it going, this isn't his writing," end quote. Panicking, she called the Sandpoint Sheriff's Office and asked the police to do a welfare check. That's a smart move. I don't feel like a lot of people even would have thought of something
to do that, but you should.
Yeah, totally. When officers arrived, they found the home empty. No signs of foul play, no signs of a break-in, nothing. Still concerned, she continued to make some more calls to try and find out what was going on. She called the post office, which isn't supposed to legally tell you anything about the mail, but Shelley convinced them to at least confirm that her dad was picking up the mail, and they confirmed that he was. So that was a relief, I guess.
See, part of me is that's a relief, right? Because he's picking up his mail. But then the other part of me is but something's not right. That almost makes it creepier.
Well, I was just going to say, it means that if she believes that he's picking up the mail,
right, is he ignoring
her?
And why writing in a different handwriting?
Well, the other thing too is can the post office confirm it's actually him, or is just somebody getting the mail?
But don't you have to show ID? You can't just pick up somebody's mail. John Thrasher.
Well, I mean, if you go to a post office box and you just use the key to open it, anyone can open it.
Oh, I get if it's like a PO box. Okay, gotcha.
But that's what I assumed, rather than a package.
Right,
or something.
That makes sense.
He has a lover who he said, hey, can you pick up a card, and write it?
Can you not say lover?
Yeah, lover felt weird.
Thank you. I know, you paused,
okay,
and I was
baby.
Oh, thanks, then he says, okay, baby, that's nice. Then she called his financial advisors because he was always in contact with them. Shelley told Buried in the Backyard, quote, "The woman that I spoke to said he's in touch all the time, and he was bugging us about a bond that was becoming mature, but then we couldn't reach him. We did get an email saying, don't worry about the money. I met some great new friends. I'm off to Canada." That was the last they'd heard of him.
Let's keep in mind, he's not a 35-year-old, wayward man. This is a grandpa.
Right, exactly.
Like, this is an older man.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
But
take a drink.
Bugs someone about a bond,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden says, "Don't worry, I met some great new friends."
Right, like that
off
would be
a
red flag. Then again, I don't know if the financial advisors should necessarily.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, no,
what's there?
True.
They're just trying to keep his money alive.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Shelley called her brother, and they agreed to call the sheriff's office and have them enter the property. It was a bizarre scene. All personal items were missing, including furniture, his computer, and clothing. His truck and his boat were also not on the property.
Well, that's a red flag.
Yeah, definitely. Something's wrong there. Shelley told Buried in the Backyard, quote, "He was there about 4 or 5 months. It's plenty of time to get your stuff arranged and unpacked, and your house shouldn't be empty," end quote. An officer said, quote, "To me, it didn't actually point to a crime. One of the scenarios that came to my mind was a possibility that he had a girlfriend. Another possibility was he was, doing something that his daughter Shelley was unaware of. There was a whole range of things that could explain what was going on at that point," end quote. I mean, yeah, from an officer's perspective, it doesn't really say there's a crime.
Well, again, there's not blood everywhere, and it's not like a 4-year-old kid. This
and
is
it wasn't
a grown
ransacked.
Man.
It wasn't ransacked.
Right. It just wasn't there. And in my mind, the first thing I thought of was he met a hot young woman and ran off with her, and she convinced him to use his money and do that.
Yeah, totally. But Shelley was convinced something bad was happening, so she asked the sheriff's office to check the handwriting on the card. Despite giving 40 or 50 handwriting samples to the lab reported that it did appear to be his handwriting. So that's even creepier.
That's even creepier because you think the daughter, especially just having an instinct for it when you're not looking for it, would have a better hunch.
Exactly.
Well, soon after, officers found an abandoned vehicle in Idaho. The plates were registered to Paul Gruber, as I'm sure you can imagine. An officer said, quote, "We ought to find a smudge, partial something. There was nothing in this vehicle. There were no fingerprints at all. Zero. Somebody really cleaned it up. That's odd, but I also have another problem. Someone is picking up his mail. Is there something suspicious about what's going on? Yes, absolutely. Can I say something's happened to Paul Gruber? No, I can't." End quote.
And I mean, that's just the reality of that particular officer's job. That's what he's perceiving.
Whoever's cleaning that car, can they come over and clean mine? Because mine's messy as shit. But Shelley kept pressure on the sheriff's office, and detectives did keep the search for Paul Gruber active. They headed back to the house to see if they could uncover any new leads to his whereabouts. An officer said, quote, when we were first in the house, there was no carpet in the dining room. A short time later, when we go back into the house, there's carpet in the dining room. So between our visits, someone's going in the house and having carpet in the stalls.
That's very weird.
Okay. I mean,
weird detail.
Is he dating an interior designer? Shelley immediately thought about blood when they told her that the carpet had been replaced. So detectives sprayed luminol in the house to look for signs of blood, and under the new carpet, the floor lit up with obvious signs of cleaning. Another carpet was found to be fully glued down. You know, like when like restaurants put the quarters? You ever have that, like, glue down a quarter so you see fucking people picking it up, but they're glued to it?
Yeah.
That's like a nasty trick.
Yeah, it is.
So they found it fully glued down. They pried it up and found a hole in the floor. It appeared that a bullet had skipped there. This was clearly a crime scene.
Wow.
Which is crazy because they've been walking around the house. So yeah, it's almost like it's been infiltrated.
Yeah, exactly.
Dogs.
What is a skipping bullet? It just like ricochets off the
floor. I'm assuming it's like a ricochet type thing. Yeah,
I guess. Dogs were sent in to find any possible remains, but they found nothing. DNA tests confirmed that the blood found at the scene was in fact Paul's. Shelley said, quote, that was hard because they hadn't found his body yet, but in here my heart had told me that he's gone. And I just started weeping. I mean, yeah, if you're talking to your dad every day and getting all these flowers and everything that's happening, and then all of a sudden that stops, that's a very big red flag.
Oh, especially because she had such a hunch about it all.
And like, we've talked about this a few weeks ago, sort of about like, if you can predict when something bad's going to happen, like almost like when you were saying like 9/11, like there's, I do feel like there's energy connected with families.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if she's having a hunch, that's, I'm not saying that's like proven in a court of law, but I do think that's a strong signal.
I mean, even if it's not, you know, a dream sequence that you woke up from, you know your family's idiosyncrasies more than anybody's.
Her instincts.
Yeah, exactly.
Detectives decided to try and set up a trap by setting up a surveillance camera on the mailbox. Soon they got profile pictures of a man picking up the mail, but didn't know his identity. Meanwhile, Shelley got access to Paul's financial records and found a mysterious paper trail of ATM withdrawals. His account wasn't just being emptied. There were electricity bills being paid and money was both coming in and out.
Very odd.
Almost like nothing had happened. Yeah, like normal, normal. Yeah. Also, checks to the local businesses were being written, and they were all owned by a man named Daryl Cool, a 42-year-old church-going father of seven children.
Spelled D-A-R-R-Y-L, not unlike D-A-R-Y-N.
Not
I don't
unlike.
Know. I'm just saying it's very similar. I don't
cool,
know.
Like car.
Seven kids.
Like,
I don't know if that's so cool.
Something's wrong there.
K-U-E-H-L, by the way.
So police picked him up to ask him some questions. A detective told Buried in the Backyard, quote, Cool said that he's working for Paul Gruber as a handyman around the house and had been for a while. He said that he was given access by Paul Gruber to pay bills and take care of things while Gruber was gone to Canada. We asked him if he was picking up the mail, and he said he was. He even said something about leaving the vehicle in Coeur d'Alene.
That looks right.
He had answers for the questions. He didn't hesitate. He wasn't sweating. End quote. That's perfectly possible.
Yeah, I mean, so far.
I mean, listen, when Carson travels, I get her mail. I pick up things. Like, yep.
I mean, I do that with my friends.
Exactly.
Like,
Daryl said he had received the checks from Paul mostly out of kindness. Then finally, they showed Daryl a photo of Paul to confirm this was the man they were talking about and appeared bewildered, saying that was not the Paul Gruber he knew.
Oh, my God.
The detective said, quote, so at that point, you have to consider the possibility that someone's been impersonating Paul Gruber. Anything's possible.
Right.
So we decided to bring in a composite sketch artist from the state police and had him sit down with Mr. Cool and had Mr. Cool describe this person that he knew as Paul Gruber. End quote. The sketch oddly resembled the artist drawing it.
Oh, my God.
This is like a Matt case.
This is very bizarre.
Investigators searched Cool's property and found items belonging to Paul, like bar tools, a generator, and a compressor. But Daryl had simple reasoning for these things. Quote, the generator and the compressor were given to me by Mr. Gruber, Daryl told them. I'm not sure that's a simple reason.
I know, right?
The investigator added, quote, even though he obviously knew where his house was, had access to his vehicles, had access to his finances, his ATM, we couldn't prove that Daryl Cool had actually met the real Paul Gruber. That was tough, end quote.
Very
I just
odd.
Love, like, the sketch artist, like, drawing
himself.
Like a selfie. Another detective said, quote, Daryl Cool packed up with his family and went back to his home area, which was near Gig Harbor, Washington. To me, that was a clue that he had done something wrong because that's normal behavior for an offender.
Yeah.
It was pretty frustrating, end quote. They just didn't have enough for a successful case. There's a lot of like loose ends here that they can't really tie up. At At one point, according to Spokesman Review, authorities had even considered calls to America's Most Wanted and Unsolved Mysteries to help them crack the case. I fucking loved both of those shows when I was a kid.
Well, and they're both, they were somewhat effective from what I remember.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, literally, that was before even, you know, social media was around. Yeah. So that was kind of TV social media to get the collective population in on solving a case.
They solved so many cases. Yeah. It's crazy.
They really helped it out. Yeah.
There were no podcasts at that time either. So in August of 1995, a deputy who had worked on Paul's house at one point and who had been a carpenter and electrician overheard frustrated investigators talking about the case. They sent the deputy in to investigate the house one more time to see if there was anything they had missed. Inside a crawl space under the house, the deputy spotted a depression.
Wow, that's hard to...
Yeah.
You know, which is very thorough.
Yeah. The detectives had excluded the crawl space because the first search didn't identify any burial site there. But this time they immediately detected the scent of a decaying body. And 31 inches deep, they found finger bones. The Spokesman Review reported that in total, it was 17 months before authorities found Paul's remains.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. An officer said, quote, "All of a sudden, I pulled up a finger bone. The fingers and everything had decayed away. I mean, the flesh had, and so the fingers had dropped off, but that wrist and the watch on it was still intact." Oh, my God. He continues saying, quote, "and still ticking. As we dug that out, we found the rest of the remains."
And not for nothing, but that's 31 inches deep. So that's over 2 feet. Yeah. That's like basically 2.5 feet down. That's a pretty big dig.
Yeah, totally. His body was found wearing a bathrobe and wrapped in an air mattress.
Oh, God.
According to court documents, quote, "an autopsy revealed 4 gunshot wounds to the body, which were determined to be the likely cause of death," end quote. Daryl was still the prime suspect, and investigators asked anyone that knew him or Daryl to come forward. A friend of Paul's came forward that had spent a few days with Paul in Reno right before he vanished. He said Paul had showed him a video of his new house, and Daryl had appeared in the video.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the court documents show that, quote, "in January 1996, the officer conducted a photographic lineup with a friend of Gruber's who claimed that he might be able to identify a person possibly involved in Gruber's disappearance and death. Gruber's friend identified Kuhl as the man he had seen in a videotape shown to him by Gruber and identified Gruber as Daryl," end quote.
Okay, so this bitch was lying, saying he didn't know who Paul Gruber was.
Right.
Red flag.
But he did know the real Paul. It was enough for a search warrant, and authorities arrested Daryl in his new home in Washington. And good thing he didn't know they were coming. He had a full ready-to-go escape bag with food, clothing, and even a gun and a silencer.
Holy crap.
Yeah, so this guy was like, you know,
good
he
timing,
knew,
though, on, you know, with yeah. the cops.
Oh, definitely.
I always carry that with me.
Well, so. That's, yeah, we know that, Matt. The gun had the same kind of ammunition as was found in Paul's body. Never a good sign if you're trying to cover that up. But of course, all of the evidence was circumstantial until a lawyer with the Attorney General's office, which had been working on the case, came up with a great idea.
Oh, do tell.
The attorney's name is Scott Birch. We should give him a shout out.
Yeah.
Scott told Buried in the Backyard, quote, "I'm in my chief investigator's office and we were watching the noon news and there was a story came on about the Unabomber and that they had identified the Unabomber from DNA on the stamps. It was an epiphany, and I told my boss, we're going to identify who sent those cards to Shelley Kepley's family by the DNA of those stamps."
So smart.
Very smart.
Good one, Scott Birch.
Yeah, good job, Scott Birch. The Spokesman Review reported that, quote, "detectives examined the dried glue and saliva on the licked postage stamp for DNA evidence. It matched the DNA in a blood sample drawn from Daryl Kuhl."
There's end something quote. So satisfying
I know.
About that.
Especially when it involves DNA, because it's like so conclusive.
Exactly.
You know there's no area for misunderstanding with this, and at least for this one. The handwriting samples were sent to another lab who confirmed they were a forgery. Now remember, she gave 50 to 60 samples and they thought it was still him. So
right.
That's kind of insane. And it was concluded that Daryl Kuhl was the one who forged the letter.
Wow, that's like oddly satisfying. After 3 years, Shelley was ready to see Daryl, tried for her father's murder. 3 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, prosecutors laid out what they thought happened while Daryl remained his maintained his innocence. According to the Bonner County Daily Bee, Daryl, quote, insists he is innocent and maintains that he was set up to take the fall by Gruber's real killer. Cool argues somebody else killed Gruber, assumed the man's identity, and framed him, end quote.
I mean, that's rather complicated.
Also,
but
the stamps, buddy.
Right, the stamps.
Scott said, quote, I believe that Paul Gruber came upon Daryl Cool, perhaps at the post office or the local gas station, something like that, end quote. He theorized that Paul befriended people very easily and Daryl watched his house for him while he was on vacation, then killed him simply because he needed money. Scott said, quote, I think that Daryl's motivation was to adopt Paul Gruber's lifestyle and his money as much as he could get away with it. Well, right, because for me, like, I'm thinking if I had done that, if I had killed someone, I would run the fuck away. But he was still making, like, checks out and deposits in and out.
In and out,
paying bills.
Right.
I mean, that's, you have to just be completely loco. I mean, like, you're going to kill someone and then just
take
their generator and start taking their belongings and start writing their checks. Right. And no one's ever going to connect it to you.
Right. Ever? Like, yes, family and grandkids. Like, he's just going to live on as his grandfather?
That's not going to work.
Well, it actually seemed to have worked, his plan, until Shelley got involved. After a 3-week trial, Daryl was found guilty of first-degree murder, which is good.
Yeah.
According to the Bonner County Daily Bee, quote, a Bonner County jury convicted Cool of first-degree murder, grand theft, and multiple forgery accounts in 1997. He is serving a 25-to-life sentence.
Hopefully it's life, honestly.
Well, I mean, he's also not very smart. Yeah. Like, he's just, like, I mean, he's smart in the sense of, I guess, picking up the mail, having a good excuse, like making deposits in and out. Like, because if he, if Paul wasn't the type of guy to call his daughter or send him flowers, send her flowers, it's possible.
Yeah.
No one was questioning it.
No, no one was. Exactly. You know?
So in that sense, but yeah, well, we'll check back in on that asshole.
Right.
Let us know what you guys think of the case. Hashtag Martinis and Murder. You can tweet us, DM us, do whatever you want at Carpe Darren and at Jay Thresher.
Yeah, please do follow us. By the way, I want to mention too, if you guys haven't already, please rate and review us on iTunes because it would definitely help us get discovered. And you guys always have nice things to say, but please only give us 4 or 5 stars. Thanks. Darren, why don't you do a listener shout out as we wrap up this rather fast episode?
Erica on Facebook posted a picture of herself eating Taco Bell, which was great, and said, the motherfucking Taco Bell Strangler episode got me hankering for some motherfucking Taco Bell. Thanks a lot. Emphasis my own. Erica, I hear you.
Did you see this picture? She's like mid-bite of like a cheesy gordita crunch.
Yeah, or if you're, Matt, what did you say? A gordito?
A gordito crunch.
Do you want your gordito, Darren? No, I don't want a fucking gordito. Jesus.
I also wanted to wish happy birthday on August 8th to Nicole C. She's a longtime listener of the show, so I wanted to make sure she got a nice little shout out.
Happy birthday.
Whenever she may be listening. And also, Krista on Facebook, another Taco Bell thing. You know, we recently did the Taco Bell Strangler.
I saw this today. This is very important news. Breaking.
Yes, she says Taco Bell forgot my cinnamon twist and my soda was flat. I don't even know what to do with myself. I could use all of your thoughts and prayers.
Honestly, I think I wrote, this is not okay.
This is not okay.
I was going to say sue Taco Bell, but then I was like, no, I love Taco Bell.
No, we love Taco Bell.
Like, and I'm sure if she went back and she showed the receipts,
they would absolutely,
they would give her cinnamon twists for life.
For life, maybe. By the way, this is a great example of when thoughts and prayers do work. This is an appropriate time.
School shooting, not the same.
Not the same.
Forgetting your cinnamon twists and your drink,
thoughts and prayers. All right, we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks
Bye.
For listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.